Hi, I'm Maggie Saldine, peer recovery coach for Mind Springs Health and co-host of the KDNK public affairs show, Chemical World. I had the distinct honor of sitting down recently with Arn Manconi, the program manager for Garfield County Prep, and Diana Andrews, who is the former program manager of Garfield County Prep. Please enjoy this conversation that we had about sexual health in our schools here in the Roaring Fork Valley.
Hi, my name is Maggie Saldine. I'm a peer recovery coach for Mind Springs Health. I'm a certified Colorado peer and family specialist.
I'm just Diana Andrews. I used to manage the Garfield County Prep Program, which is a comprehensive sex ed program for middle schoolers and high schoolers. And now I'm running a tobacco prevention grant for Pitkin County Public Health here in Colorado. And I've done a lot of prevention work. I was an elementary school educator, and I also have a degree in aviation electronics. So.
And hi, I'm Arn Manconi. I'm the new program manager for PrEP in Garfield County. And formerly, I ran a national youth development charity that was focused on value-based leadership and outdoor sports education. And I was a Eagle County commissioner. So I'm excited to be here and have a discussion that hopefully the listener will get a better understanding of what's happening in the arena of education and delivering sex ed in schools, and also what is sex ed? What does it look like? How did it get shaped to where it is? And where is it going? And maybe Diana could start us off with, since she's been working with over a dozen schools, as many as 18 in Garfield County, traveled all over the country and being trained, understands who the what the coursework looks like, what the results and goals are from all of this training for kids. Diana, what do you have? How would you start us off?
Well, I would start off by saying sexual health education looks very different depending on where you are in the state, in the nation, in the world. When we talk about comprehensive health education, it's a little less scary. But under the umbrella of comprehensive health education involves sexual health education. And my usual retort is it's not a how-to program as far as the Garfield County PrEP program. It's a skills-based program that teaches kids refusal skills and how to navigate a healthy relationship where, as being sexual beings, sex will probably play a part at some point. And it's just PrEP stands for Personal Responsibility Education Program. It's a federal grant that was given to states, and then states determined how that money was distributed. And here in Colorado, do we have 64 counties-ish?
Yes.
Only three counties received this funding. So only three counties are doing comprehensive sexual health education underneath the personal responsibility umbrella. What's happening in all the other counties could look very different. And even here in Garfield County, not all of our school districts have adopted this program. Not all the schools within districts have adopted the program. So it can even look very different at a localized level.
So you may not know the answer to this, but I know that Mesa County specifically is abstinence-only sexual health education. Do you believe that that is the majority of the state is more in those abstinence-only? I know it's very different.
If they're doing it at all.
Really?
So there's no guarantee. As I understand it, in Colorado, school districts do not have to adopt the national health standard. They can choose not to. But if they choose to adopt the national health standard, then they have to teach comprehensive health. And that's become even more defined with recent legislature that I'm not as familiar with because I was leaving my position as that was coming in. But it has to be comprehensive, which means they won't get funding for teaching abstinence only anymore, even though there's a lot of funding out there. There's no research that proves the effectiveness of abstinence only. And you will have people argue that abstinence only it's not inclusive. It does not teach to the LGBTQ people who don't identify as gender binary. So you leave out a large, well, you leave out a portion of the population, and those are the pieces of the population that are actually at a higher risk of unplanned pregnancy or STDs, and yet they're not getting the education they need to be safe, develop skills, and navigate their relationships in a healthy way if they're getting abstinence only.
And so to reframe a little bit too, because I know, you know, schools and counties can be very hesitant, but if they did choose to adapt these comprehensive sexual health education plans, they would receive more funding to disseminate those programs.
I can't answer. I don't know. Because I know in previous legislature, there were policies in place, but there was no funding.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what kind of funding there is now.
Okay. Before we started, you said something about how it kind of helps sometimes to start with asking the question of what was your sexual education experience like? And I think about this all the time because I feel so, so lucky to have the experiences I had growing up here in the Roaring Fork Valley. I got HIV education, and I feel like I learned more as an adult about really how the education I received was a lot more thorough than many others. And additionally, I grew up in a family that was very open about talking about these issues, which is another huge stroke of luck, because I've been passionate about being involved with sex education since I was 11. And I remember all my friends who were much older would always come to me with their questions because I had a mom I could go to with my questions. You know, I had people in my schools who I could felt safe going to, both in primary and high school here in the Valley. And I went to college in Grand Junction. And just that concept of even talking about these things with your parents was... most children are like, oh, yeah, I didn't have that experience at all. And then they have abstinence-only education. And so I just feel so grateful to have had that kind of open communication around sexual health. And I think that that's really what made me interested and passionate about this, because most people are not comfortable talking about these things.
Well, and that's a huge key component of the PrEP program that maybe is under-discussed or maybe... not understood by the parents and the general public, is having that trusted adult, whether we would want it to be a parent, but we understand that not all parents are in a place to be that trusted adult around sexual health. By having it be a normalized conversation where you can ask questions and not go to Google to find out the myths that are out there still, that is one of the biggest prevention pieces of kids not having to learn through experience or bad situations, is having that person to go to answer their questions, to be non-judgmental, to be value neutral. And of course, age appropriate is, you have to have it be age appropriate. But yes, you were very lucky.
Well, and I think it's, you know, even having those parents who are open to talking about it, it still can be really difficult for your trusted
Absolutely.
Adult to be your
yeah.
parent. And so it's good to acknowledge that, you know, that's a very broad term.
And you also even mentioned that, you know, older kids were coming to you for the answers. So even as frustrating as it might be when parents opt their children out of the education, because we're so passionate about what we do, we want kids to have this information, but we also have to kind of just remind ourselves they'll be talking to their friends who do have the right information. So that gives us hope.
Well, and
to
I think,
fill those gaps.
Yeah, and I think too in that aspect, and it's funny, it just came up to me while I was watching a show last night. They were saying something about how the schools paved the way for these kind of vulgar conversations or something like that, so that parents can feel a little bit more open having these conversations, because I think being able to support those parents, you know, whether or not they want their children having this education, they sometimes lack the skills to have these conversations.
Absolutely.
And one way or the other, they are the best people to go to. So if we can support the families to know the answers to these questions and how they can, you know, meet their own cultural anticipations and guidelines or whatever is comfortable for them while also providing their children with accurate education.
Well, and I think you hit on exactly why so many parents in Garfield County, after many focus groups and conversations in town halls, became accepting of this curriculum being in the schools, is having those conversations parents are nervous that we're teaching values. And so they admitted they don't have the medically accurate words and knowledge to answer their kids' questions, but they know what their family or religious values are, and they don't want that to be compromised. That's why being value neutral is so important. So you will see in the classrooms, when questions come up, because kids have the opportunity to put their questions into an anonymous question box, when it comes to be a value question, the teachers are trained to say, you know, some people will do this, other people will do this. You need to decide based on your comfort level, your religious beliefs, your personal values, what is right for you. And so once parents understood that comprehensive sexual health should be value neutral, now that is a skill, and it's not always easy to remove your values from something, but it's definitely something we work hard to achieve. So then there was that agreement. Values are taught at home. Medically accurate, age-appropriate information is taught in the schools. And the parents were sort of like, whoosh, thank goodness. And then we would get reports from parents that, wow, the talk or conversations around sexual health is much different than what I expected it would be, because the kids are sort of at a mature level because they have the mature vocabulary.
And I just love that focus on value neutral. And I feel like that to me is, when you describe it, it's like the golden thread throughout all of my kind of various careers as a health center assistant with Planned Parenthood, working in street outreach shelters in New Mexico, and as a job coach for Mountain Valley Developmental Services, and just all the places I've been, it's all about, well, I can't really give you advice on what you should do because everyone does it different. And that's specifically, you know, at Planned Parenthood, people always ask, well, what do you do? And how do you do this? And it's always like, well,
how old were you when you started having sex? Well, we're not here to discuss my sexual health background,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, diffusing those, but at the same time, still finding the true question behind the question and giving them an answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to answer their questions, even if that answer is, you know what, I don't know the answer. Let's look it up together, or let me do some research and I'll get back to you. It's okay to say, I don't know.
But there are questions as kids get older that you can't necessarily even call it value-based and or health. It might be something like, person asking, you know, I've been in a relationship with this person for X period of time. This is starting to come up for me, and I'm trying to decide how I should make choices around whether or not I should have sex. And then it falls into more psychology, more mindfulness, more self-awareness type training.
If they have skills through the program that's being delivered in Garfield County, what the comprehensive sex ed program in the schools is skill building. How to say no, how to use a body that says no, and how to give an alternative activity so that you can preserve the relationship, but still make it very clear that, no, my boundaries are here. And so it's a lot about, yeah, medically accurate information around birth control and STDs, but it's more so about how to build those skills of saying no, drawing the boundaries, and remaining in that relationship because you care about the person. It's easy to say no to somebody you don't like. It's a lot harder to say no to somebody who you do like and you want to keep in that conversation. So it's that conversation then starts to draw the boundaries. And then if you're in a truly respectful relationship, that person will respect your boundaries. If they don't, then that's another conversation.
And I can kind of see the combination of like the skill building and like those mindfulness techniques to kind of create a sense of your own identity and what is right for you in these decisions.
You know, Diana's talking about in terms of what's being taught in Garfield County. And Garfield County is in western Colorado near Aspen, but also considered very rural-based community. And is that the courses that are being taught in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade are called Draw the Line. And it's an evidence-based curriculum that has been developed and been tested for its what's called fidelity, and that's been going on for nearly 10 years in schools, different school districts throughout America that have taken this on. And then in high school, there's other curriculum that is offered to high school students. And these courses that are taught are typically evidence-based coursework. It's not something that...
It's a requirement, actually, of the funding.
Right. For what we're doing, it's a federal requirement. But again, it's to what I was kind of saying earlier in the conversation, that a school district could elect to take on something called comprehensive sex ed or sexual health or sexual positivity courses. And they might go to what we're using here in Garfield County, which is one of the few school districts that are using this heavily vetted coursework that is being trained. It's the teachers are trained in how to do it. And it's essentially a 6 or 7 hour course that's given out inside of an already, say, health class or science class. Some schools might be working on their own curriculum. It might be something that they do organically. There's other avenues, but this is what Diana's talking about.
And maybe we should even back up and define what is meant by comprehensive sexual health or comprehensive health. Because you're right, they don't have to adopt the curriculum that PrEP provides for them that has been vetted, it's evidence-based, so it's been heavily researched. And if it's taught the way it was designed, then you expect to get the same outcomes, which you want fewer unplanned teen pregnancies and STDs. Comprehensive sex ed includes discussions about consent, all forms of birth control, including abortion and abstinence. So it doesn't leave abstinence out of the conversation. That is a part of comprehensive sexual health. And then a condom demonstration. And so those pieces have to be included in something that is considered comprehensive sex ed. There are components that are required.
And my understanding is that the big failing of abstinence-only programs is that if children or whomever, if adolescents or when they become adults who have received abstinence-only education do end up having sex, they don't have that education to fall back on. They don't have that knowledge of condoms and STI transmission.
They might have some knowledge, but knowledge doesn't always translate to, I know a condom should be used. That doesn't mean I know how to use it.
And that includes the skills of consent as
yes.
well, and even knowing how to say no. And what I've read is just that usually what happens is they have sex in with less decision making, and so there is less chance that they would use a condom. And
well, and another argument against abstinence only is it doesn't address the 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 6 boys who have had unwanted sexual advances or sexual abuse where they had no consent. And if you're being taught that you have to wait till marriage and you've been violated, then where do you fit into those lessons? Are they talking to me? No, so I'm going to probably tune out. Are they inclusive of the LGBTQ community? If not, then how are those kids getting any education? So those are some of the arguments against abstinence only versus comprehensive.
And it really seems like it's not just about, you know, these skills related to how to use a condom or how to have sex, but really skills to protect oneself for a lifetime for like so many potential negative consequences that may or may not even be sexual activity itself.
And I always joke, and I've told Arne several times, words matter. So you just said something that made it sound like we teach kids how to have sex. No, we are not a how-to program. So I don't know how open I can be on this conversation, but my example is always, we often get the question of, what is a blowjob? And when adults hear that, even our teachers who are in training, you know, their heart rate starts to go up because they're like, oh, because we get a mental image. And so adults think that mental image that we come up with is what's being taught. Well, we don't teach how to give a blowjob. Medically accurate answer is it's when somebody uses their mouth on a person's penis for sexual gratification
mm-hmm.
between two consenting adults. And oftentimes the adults will lean in like, and? And you're like, and that's it.
Right.
That is the medically accurate, you know, very matter of fact, less is more sometimes.
When it comes to these sexual actions, it's not about these how-to instructions. It's this medically accurate information that's pretty black and white. But then it really, the concept of comprehensive sexual education is more about these skills.
Skills and how they relate to risk.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to engage in something, you want to have two consenting partners who are engaging in whatever it is. And then you want to know how to protect yourself during that activity. And that's really the important part is, okay, whatever your values are, wherever your boundaries are at, that's not for me to judge. But at least let me educate you on how to prevent if a pregnancy would be possible from that behavior or an STD. Let's talk about how we can prevent those things from happening regardless of what you're choosing to engage in.
And I guess I'm just trying to go, you know, a little on the devil's advocate
uh-huh.
perspective with this. But, of course, abstinence is the only thing
Absolutely.
That is 100% proven to eliminate any risk of pregnancy or STIs or anything like that. But the reality is that we are sexual beings and sexuality is a part of our existence. And that is unrealistic to anticipate that somebody be abstinent their entire life or until marriage. And even if they are abstinent until marriage, they still need to know how to make these personal and physical decisions for themselves of how to navigate that.
And if somebody wasn't given the choice or made a choice that they then regret or maybe don't want to make that choice again, you can choose to be abstinent throughout your life. That's your choice. So even if you made a choice that maybe you regret or you don't feel really good about and you want to slow down and wait, you can choose abstinence and that's okay. And I think also it's important to let kids know that not everybody is doing it. So here in Garfield County, we pre and post survey our students so that we can see whether or not what we're doing is working. And those questions can be really personal. Of course, they're not related to anybody's name or identity. It's all very anonymous. But it lets us know that only a small percentage of high school 9th and 10th graders are admitting to being sexually active. Nationwide, by the age of 17, it's roughly around 48% of 17-year-olds admit to having been sexually active by the time they graduate high school. So it's also an important way to let kids know that abstinence is more normal than not, and it's okay, and you're not the oddball out. And that's oftentimes what kids really need and want is to be told they're normal.
And I know that those national surveys have also shown that students tend to assume that there's more sexual activity or more drug
Everybody's
use happening
doing it.
Than there really is.
And so then you start to think, well, I hear, you know, all the people in the locker room talking like, okay, well, talk is talk. So it starts building those critical thinking skills of, well, maybe they're just putting out a persona because they too feel like they need to do that to fit in,
mm-hmm.
that maybe they're not really telling the truth, sort of stroking their ego a little bit.
Which for, I mean, the population we're talking about, adolescents,
it
makes
a big part of
sense.
It.
Yeah.
You know, I was just going to read us, we're talking about what's going on, and here's a statistic that was done by the Guttmacher Institute, a policy research organization that seeks to promote sexual and reproductive health. And writes, in 2014, more than 75% of public and private schools taught students that abstinence is the most effective way to avoid pregnancy and sex-related infections like HIV. Meanwhile, only 35% taught students how to use a condom. When used correctly, condoms are 98% effective at preventing pregnancy, and they have been found to reduce HIV transmission by 87%. As of 2015, less than 6% of LGBTQ plus youth reported that their high school class included positive portrayals of LGBTQ related subjects. six states, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas, have laws that expressively forbid the promotion of homosexuality in health classes. So sort of what I may be conflating some of this information, but if taught properly, abstinence along with how to use condoms, along with what the risks are due to sexually transmitted disease, there's a lower rate of teen pregnancy, which is a health issue, which is also an economic issue, a cost issue to communities. And that's one of the drivers of why Garfield County brought in PrEP and took on the grant initially, because there was high rates of teen pregnancy. And it has come down. And the surveys that Diana is talking about is because of the level of teaching of awareness. And the way I've heard it said many times is teaching empowerment of agency so that young people can make consensual choices.
The second part of this conversation will air on KDNK at 4:30 on March 23rd. Stay tuned.